Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It'll be our best show of the week. We are live in Los Angeles on a Thursday, and this is The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, new haircut boy. I had a great night's sleep. I got a new haircut. I played tennis. I am so alive. I watched the Lakers get rolled last night. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm good. That's a very nice haircut.
Thank you.
You did a good job.
Hundy. I tipped 40.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I felt you guilted me into the big tip. Listen, you got to tip people right now.
You do. And if they're coming to your house, you should throw a little extra.
All right. So there is this misconception. OKC, Chris Paul, for the record, what did we say a couple days ago? Chris Paul deserves MVP votes. He's having a ridiculous season. This was supposed to be a tank job. Philadelphia tanked for 5 years, couldn't win. OKC tanked for an hour, thanks to Chris Paul, who should be getting MVP votes. But the story today is the Western Conference. The Lakers finished with the number one seed. There is this perception out there, oh, it's quite an accomplishment. Now, in most years, you would be right. And I do believe the West is better than the East. It's like arguing the SEC is the best college football conference. Can we stop arguing? It is. Next issue. The West has been better than the East for years. They have more great stars, 20 of the top 25 players. But this has been a very weird season. Now, let's just cut the season into two seasons. The regular season and the bubble season so far. These are two seasons, okay? So let's remember what happened to the West this year. Because the Lakers finished number one and everybody's just patting themselves on the back in Los Angeles. Look at this. It was a transition regular season. The Clippers got two new stars and they had to fit them in. And Paul George missed 22 games. But Houston's good. No, actually, Harden got Westbrook and D'Antoni had a whole new staff. Well, Dallas is young and fantastic, but Luka and Porzingis both got hurt. Portland is really good now, but Nurkic wasn't available, and Melo wasn't acquired until the season had already started. Oklahoma City, what a season. Now, let's be honest, the last 20 games, they were great. It was a total rebuild, and Chris Paul didn't know the names of any of the players. What about Denver? What about him? Super young and talented, but everybody outside of Jokic got hurt this year. Colin, you love Utah. Yeah, I do, but Mike Conley starts the season injured. They had to figure out if Donovan Mitchell could be point. It was a mess. Conley came back. They were in transition all year. Oh, by the way, Golden State, tanked. The West was in transition all season. New coaches, new stars, new staffs, injuries. And then COVID hit. And everybody got healthy. And now the West, they don't have the issues. Nurkic is back and Melo is feeling it. Westbrook, Harden, they know what works and know what doesn't. Utah, well, they're still Utah, but Denver now's healthy, Jokic and all. Dallas, Porzingis, Luka are humming. They're past their injuries. OKC's playing with house money. Clippers now, Paul George and Kawhi. No load management, no days off. It is now the Lakers who have the issues. They don't have Avery Bradley, their best defensive guard. Good luck against Portland. Good luck against Houston. The Lakers were a number one seed, but there is a misconception how impressive that was this regular season. Yes, the West is better. Yes, it's loaded. Yes, it's deeper. But everybody outside of the Lakers felt like they were in this weird transition. They dealt with injuries. And now it's the Lakers who have a huge issue. Rondo's out for still another month. Bradley's out for the bubble. You're asking Alex Caruso to step up. I had two scouts texting me last night during this game. And the two scouts, I'm sure they know each other, but they didn't know they were texting me. One a Western Conference scout and one an Eastern Conference scout. And they were like, God, this Laker team, they miss Avery Bradley. They're old. They're slow. They can't. Chris Paul's 35. He looked like the youngest guy and the best player on the floor. I mean, he was flying around last night. This is not your typical number one seed in the West. It's not. And there have been down years in the SEC. Like where the number one doesn't feel quite as good. For a lot of Saban's years, Tennessee was a mess. Georgia didn't have a right coach. Florida didn't have a right coach. Auburn was a mess. I watched the Lakers last night, and one of the scouts told me, he goes, Lakers aren't getting to the Western Conference Finals. He goes, they're not. They can't hit threes, and they can't defend them. You cannot get to a conference finals if you can't hit threes and you can't defend them, and they don't do either. It's not that they're not good. It's not that LeBron and AD haven't worked well. I love them. Those guys I love. But this is a very limited team, and the number one seed isn't nearly as impressive as previous years. So I read this story this morning. NFL history says the Cowboys will be very successful if the wide receivers in Dallas meet expectations. So Amari Cooper had over 1,000 yards. Michael Gallup now looks like a steal, had over 1,000 yards. And last year, Randall Cobb almost did. He's gone, but they draft CeeDee Lamb, who is a spectacular talent, a rookie out of Oklahoma. And in the history of the NFL, if you have three wide receivers over 1,000 yards, you're a Super Bowl team. That's the kind of team you are. You're that explosive. The problem, of course, with Dallas is, this is not the issue. The receiver thing is not the issue. As Louis Riddick, sports dude at another network, said yesterday on a tweet, the problem for Dallas, they had 9 potential game-winning or tying go-ahead fourth-quarter drives last year across 4 games against really good teams. They got 2 field goals. Nobody in the league got less out of drives that were similar. So the question is, in Dallas, was it a Jason Garrett issue or a Dak issue? I'm a huge believer in keeping your eye on trends. And I've said this before. When I first moved to California, I'm about, you know, a few hundred yards from the beach. I would get a coffee on Saturday mornings, go down to the beach, and I would watch surfers. And I would do it like for an hour every Saturday. And it was just therapeutic. And you'd watch these surfers. And the thing I noticed about surfers, and I found it metaphorical in my life, is the really good surfers were patient. They didn't waste their time jumping on average waves. They'd sit there for 15 minutes to get the perfect wave. And this is why I believe in trends. I think life is cyclical. The great times don't last forever like the great waves. Watch trends. Be patient. Watch trends. And when you see trends, jump on them fast, adapt early, because people will catch up to those trends and they'll end quickly. So you've got to constantly watch trends, watch trends, watch trends. This is hot. Go for it. Jump on the wave and ride it. Trends going to end quickly. Great times and great waves are amazing. Ride them, but they don't last long. And Dallas has a trend. The last 3 years with Dak Prescott, here are his numbers against winning teams. These are playoff teams. These are atrocious. He's 6-12, 21 touchdowns, 19 picks, with a really bad passer rating. And this is why franchise tagging Dak made a lot of sense. Because in Dallas, there is a question we don't have an answer for yet. And the question is, whose damn fault was it? Was it Jason Garrett's or was it Dak's? And we will know the answer by December. And if it's Dak's fault, they'll be looking for another quarterback or franchise him. And if it was Jason Garrett's fault, Dak is going to make over $130 million. That's why when I look at the Cowboys schedule this year, if you look at the trend, there's only 8 games I care about. Do not at me. Do not tweet me when they roll the Giants. Do not at me when they beat the Falcons, Browns, Cardinals, Washington. Do not at me when they overwhelm Joe Burrow. I am only looking at 8 games for the Cowboys because the trend I see the last 3 years is they can't beat good teams. I want to see them at the Rams and at the Seahawks. I want to see them at the Eagles, host the Steelers. I want to see them at Minnesota, at Baltimore, and host the Niners and host the Eagles. Exactly half their schedule. That's the trend I want. And if they're 6-2 or 5-3, then that wave I'm jumping on. It's the Dak wave, and I'm riding it for 4 years. But if not, don't waste your time tweeting me as they roll Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones or Baker Mayfield. I'm not interested. So look for trends, jump on them quickly, and realize they don't last very long.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, I was talking a couple of days ago. Starting any business is hard. And a couple of days ago, I was on a Zoom call. Somebody invited me on a Zoom call, and there's a bunch of smart people. And one of the guys on it was Peter Chernin. Peter Chernin's an investor, an entrepreneur. And I was on this thing for 30 minutes. And at the end, I said, I got to ask you a question. What's the one thing you should know about, like, building a business? And he said, he goes, listen, it's always hard in the first year. He goes, 80% of the stuff that you think this is brilliant. He goes, you better be ready to pivot because you'll be out the door in 6 months. 80% of the stuff doesn't work. Can you pivot to what works? And whatever works, double down on what doesn't, get rid of it. He goes, now, over time, if it's still hard years later, it's not a good business. And I've always felt that. Like, you know, I mean, any relationship, go to therapy, figure it out. But if you're 9 years in and you have to go to therapy twice a week, it's just too damn hard. Last night, Philadelphia beats Washington. Washington's the worst team in the bubble. Washington's awful. And Ben Simmons is limping off, and they're, you know, they should have put this game away literally 6 minutes in. I mean, I don't think Washington has a player that could be in the Sixers' top six rotation. Philadelphia should roll them. Simmons gets hurt. A couple days ago, I said Embiid was yelling at one of his teammates. This is too hard. It's just too hard. This is the classic example of, I understand, this is the third year. Like, it's got to work now. I mean, just think about this. Think about all the things that don't work. Why are they awful on the road? They're a terrible road team. Why? Chemistry's not good. They had to switch Ben Simmons' position as they entered the bubble. Now he's a forward. They're constantly rearranging their pieces. They let go of Redick. They bring in Al Horford. Every year they got to rearrange the deck chairs. Brett Brown's on the hot seat every year. He's struggling to make Embiid and Simmons get along. And, oh, by the way, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid do not fit together. I'm sorry, but AD and LeBron, I mean, Joey and I laugh, like three games in, you're like, oh, it's perfect. Chris Paul had a bunch of guys he'd never seen before. 20 games in, you're like, oh, it works. Kawhi and Paul George felt like 15 games in, it worked. I mean, LeBron and D-Wade's games weren't perfectly fit together. They're kind of the same guy. And 17 games in, they started winning all their games. You start looking at Kemba and the Celtics. Worked instantly. By the way, Kevin Durant, a superstar to Golden State. That could have been problematic. 2 weeks in, it worked. Peyton Manning to Denver. Great September. Emmanuel Sanders last year. The Niners insert him into the wide receiving core. First game in, it works. Like, nothing can be this hard. You know, you look at Shaq and Kobe. But Shaq and Kobe were kids. I mean, Kobe was really literally a kid. And then Del Harris had them. And they're young. But they kept getting better. And then Phil Jackson comes in. And they keep getting better. And you get a dynasty. And by the end, they wore each other out. But you kept seeing growth. Embiid and Simmons are 3 years in. Multiple teammates in. They keep rearranging the roster. Like, the Philadelphia's talent is incredible. Why are they scraping around with crappy Washington? Why are teammates yelling at each other? If you're 9 years into a marriage and you're still at therapy twice, three times a month, maybe it's too hard. Just maybe it's not meant to be.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I think Baltimore is going to go 16-0, and I think they're going to fly through the playoffs and win the Super Bowl. I've never predicted that. There are three great rosters in football. There's a lot of good ones, but there's three rosters that are different. And credit goes to the owner, the GM, the coach, whoever. San Francisco's loaded. Very few flaws. Kansas City's stacked. Baltimore. Interesting. Baltimore, Hollywood Brown, a speedy wide receiver, gained 23 pounds of muscle during this offseason. Remember last year how Lamar Jackson completely transformed formed his body. Now, of the three great teams, I am a believer that tough childhood equals better adulthood. I'll give you a fascinating study. They did a study on 300 millionaires in Great Britain to find out how they think. And they looked at their childhood, they looked at their communication skills, their flaws and weaknesses. And what the study discovered is that 40% of the millionaires, not 40 of 300, almost half of them were dyslexic. Why? Why would that be? Now think about that if you're driving and listening to me on radio. What the hell would that be? Because dyslexic kids are often humiliated. Dyslexic kids feel ostracized. Dyslexic kids, it's never easy. Nothing. Reading a menu can be humiliating. It's hard. But that metal, and they also found that dyslexic kids are more strategic, realizing they struggle with reading. They tend to hop ahead of other kids. Time alone, work ethic, strategic ideas. And how does that tie to Baltimore? Because of the three great teams in the league, it's actually been fairly easy for Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes learns from Alex Smith. Next year, it's the AFC Championship. Next year, they win the Super Bowl. That's pretty quick. Didn't work that quick for Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. Then there's San Francisco. First year, Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan have a year together. They roll the good teams. They humiliate Green Bay twice, and they end up going to the Super Bowl. But it's been different from Baltimore. Now you think to yourself, Colin, come on, Lamar is the MVP. No. Of the three great rosters, it's actually been more of a struggle than you think. Well, they're great, but they can't beat Mahomes. They're 0-2. Well, they get to the playoffs, and they've been humiliated both times. Lamar is the MVP. He can't play from behind. He can't throw. It pissed him off. You listen to Lamar. The scariest thing in the world is pro sports, is great people who have been humiliated get out of their way. The AFC is a two-team race. One of them's holding champagne parties and parades. The other in Baltimore has been humiliated. Watch it. I've never said this in my life. Baltimore is the two scariest things in football. Stacked and pissed. Because it's been hard. I mean, Lamar Jackson, he can't throw. Don't say it. He can't play from behind. Nobody says that about Mahomes. Nobody says that about Garoppolo. I mean, is Tyreek Hill putting on 24 pounds? Is Dante Pettis in San Francisco? We all look at this road for Baltimore, and we say, you know, it's just been, oh, my God, it's just win after win. No, it's not. Lamar Jackson was MVP. He's the only MVP in my life that we have said the following offseason, I think he'll regress. Oh, is he old? No, he's actually just coming into his prime. There's never been an MVP. Half the league doesn't buy into Lamar Jackson. Hell, I could say more than half the league. That's never happened in my life. We didn't doubt a young Peyton or a young Favre or a young Mahomes or a young... That dyslexic study is fascinating. Look it up. You're more strategic. You learn to work alone. You got that little bitter chip, that little bitter resentment. Ravens 16-0. Count on it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Yesterday, Joy, at the end of the show, I found this tedious. I like lists.
Yes.
I'm very much
very bothered by this list.
Yeah. I like all-time lists, all-time. Like that. I like this stuff. It's what I'm into. So The Athletic is a subscription service with a bunch of sports writers, right? And they ranked every offense 1 to 32. I found it so outrageous. They had Kansas City 1 and Washington 32. Outside of that, I thought it was a mess. how in God's name they could have Cleveland at 18, which is the Noah's Ark of the NFL. They got two of everything. They got Tennessee at 9.
Mm-mm.
What? Ryan Tannehill? They have Seattle 5. Seattle has the 28th ranked offense. Rashad Penny at running back's been a bust. And if not, basically Seattle's offense, which looks like a 1984 offense, is we're water is coming onto the ship. Russell, bail it and get us to the end zone. So I am going to present, before I get to Mark Schlereth, to me the 10 best offenses, a very redeemable list here. Let's just go 1 through 10. Let's start. These are the 10 best offenses in the NFL. Let's not even argue about Kansas City.
Number 1.
Okay, not only is Andy Reid the best schematic guy in the NFL along with Sean Payton, they had the number 1 scoring offense. 4 of their skilled people made the Pro Bowl. Patrick Mahomes, as a baby, had the highest passer rating in league history and the most passing yards per game in NFL history, 303. This is it. This is like the greatest show on turf, but way more talented. Let's not argue over this. Number two. The Ravens. Listen, they ran for 3,300 yards. That was the most in the NFL. They're the first team since 1950 in a passing league to throw for over 200 yards a game and to rush on average for over 200 yards a game. And by the way, the critics of Lamar Jackson, here's all you need to know. Not in the first half of the season, when everybody's seen film on him, in the second half of the season, the final 8 games, you know what he was? 25 TDs, 1 pick, passer rating 130. He's getting better, folks. He's not getting worse.
Number 3.
There's a drop-off now, and it goes to the Saints. Okay, it's KC Baltimore. Saints don't throw the ball deep downfield because Drew Brees has limitations throwing the ball. But they were the third highest scoring offense. Michael Thomas is hard to cover. They added Emmanuel Sanders, who's a savvy, smart veteran who will step right in and make 75 catches. I like their offensive line a lot. And again, like Kansas City schematically, they're kind of on a different level.
Number 4.
I don't even know how you dispute this. Tampa. And I think they may be better, but I just don't know if they'll be better early, so I'll give it to New Orleans at 3. They have the best receiving core in the league, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. I think they have the best tight end group in the league. I thought they were thin at running back, and they drafted it, and they addressed it. They also solved right tackle. Gronk may be one of the best blocking tight ends in football, so he'll be terrific in the red zone, and Bruce Arians will challenge Tom to air it out. I like him a lot.
Number 5.
I put San Francisco 5. They run with ease. It's a Kyle Shanahan offense. It's really a run offense, masquerading as an explosive pass offense. Second highest scoring team in the league at 29.9 points a game. They have added left tackle Trent Williams, who is, believe it or not, an upgrade over Joe Staley. Brandon Ayuk is a first-round wide receiver who is wild explosive out of Arizona State. And listen, for all you Garoppolo critics, slow down. He's the only quarterback to rank top 5 in completion percentage, passing yards per attempt, and passing touchdowns. Garoppolo's fine. The issue to this team is secondary, is reliability at wide receiver. It's not quarterback.
Number 6.
Cleveland. Folks, where's the hole? I mean, at this point, it's Baker, because Nick Chubb's probably the most underrated running back. They upgraded at tight end, and they were already good with David Njoku. Now they have Austin Hooper from Atlanta. Jarvis Landry is a monster volume receiver. Odell Beckham is finally healthy, and they solved their tackle issue. They also have J.C. Treader at guard, who I think is way above average. This is a Pro Bowl offense. This is nothing but stars. And if Baker can be a slightly more coachable, a little less ad-libbing, it can be a play-action pass offense over a pass-first offense. They could set records. This could be the best offense in the history of Cleveland Brown football.
Number 7.
You may be surprised. I think the Raiders' offensive line is probably the most underrated in football. It's a really good offensive line. The Raiders' rookies last year, their rookies, were number 1 in scrimmage yards, scrimmage touchdowns, rushing yards, catches, and sacks. This is a very young team. Derek Carr is somewhere near top 10 to top 12 quarterbacks. They also went and got Henry Ruggs, the speed receiver. Keep your eye on the Raiders.
Number 8.
Cowboys. Dak can drive me crazy, and the offensive line is getting older. But you may have the potential for 3,000-yard wide receivers. Michael Gallup now, was he a third-round pick? Looks like an absolute steal. He's a burner out of Colorado State. He's become a really nice player. I don't know a ton about tight end, but Mike McCarthy and CeeDee Lamb should add juice to an already potent offense.
Number 9.
Green Bay. Now, there's a drop-off here, but they do have a number one receiver, a top quarterback, and a top running back. And Matt LaFleur is a progressive young offensive coach. PFF also puts their offensive line at number 4 in the NFL. So before I hear this, woe is me, Aaron doesn't have anything to work with. He's got a great back, a really good offensive line, a star receiver, and a smart young coach.
Number 10.
Philadelphia. Carson Wentz had to carry deck chairs last year at the end of the year, but Wentz was the first quarterback with 4,000 passing yards ever, despite not having a single receiver catch over 500 yards. It shows you the immense talent. I also think Doug Peterson and Wentz, they really work well together. Doug is really clever. Offensive line, hopefully it's not patchwork like it was last year, but those are your top 10 offense. Russell Wilson saving the Seahawks bacon every third down is not a great offense. It's a great player in an offense.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tristan Thompson has played for almost a decade in the NBA, a former number 4 pick. This year, 12-10, he went to 4 straight finals with LeBron James. They're still tight, and Tristan is joining us, the Cavs center via the Coward Global Satellite Network. You know, it's interesting. With LeBron, I always said this, Tristan. First of all, it's great to have you on the Fox team, so thank you so much for stopping by. You look great. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I'm trying to look as good as you.
Thank you. So, you know, I was talking about this with LeBron. Like, obviously, he and Chris Bosh worked, but LeBron likes an open lane so he can drive to the basket, and Chris Bosh sometimes got pushed out. Kevin Love, LeBron likes the open lane. Sometimes he pushed Kevin a little out. But Anthony Davis and LeBron have really worked from almost day one. What do you think the magic is with Anthony and LeBron? Because it doesn't feel like Anthony is giving up any of his game for LeBron.
Yeah, no, with LeBron, I know this for sure, is that he wants to surround the offense around AD. I think it was very similar to when we had Kyrie and K-Love, where he wanted, you know, Kyrie and K-Love to get going early. And then, you know, once that happens and they have a good rhythm and flow, then LeBron can kind of play his game. You know, he's such a mastermind in terms of, like, how he approaches the game on, you know, early. Let's, like, with the Lakers, let's get AD going. You know, turn 5 early, turn 4. Let's get him going. Let's let him, you know, get his rhythm and cause some mismatch problems. And then LeBron's a point guard for their team. He's going to be able to open it up and run pick and roll and put pressure on the rim.
What I worry about with the Lakers, Tristan, you know this having been in 4 straight finals. We know LeBron and AD will score. But this league is often about somebody steps up and grabs that number 3 guy steps up. It was Shane Battier maybe in Miami, or a Ray Allen, or a Matthew Dellavedova. Sometimes, or you have a night, and it is a game in which who's the 3? Who's the 4? Can I trust Kyle Kuzma? What do I know about Danny Green? Who's LA's 3?
Yeah, I think it's funny. It's very similar to when K-Love went down in 2015 with the shoulder injury against Boston. You know, a lot of teams are wondering, you know, who's going to be that third guy to step up. And I think for the Lakers, it's going to be by committee. I think every night will be a different guy. I think it depends on the matchup. You know, one thing about the playoffs is all about matchups. So certain matchups benefit other players. You know, it could be they have a matchup where, you know, their bigs are going to be dominant, where it could be a guy like Dwight Howard that has 10-8 off the bench, or JaVale McGee that has a double-double. It all depends on the matchups. But one thing about the Lakers we know is that they have guys that with championship DNA, whether it's Danny Green, Rondo, J.R. Smith, you got guys that have their backs against the wall, like Deion. Those guys have something to prove. So when it comes down to who will be the third star, I think it varies every night. Of course, yes, you know, from the beginning of the season, it's going to be Kyle Kuzma. Everyone's been saying that about him. But also, we don't want to put the pressure on him. I think for him, if I'm his teammate, it's like, you know, just go out there and play your game. We know it's your first time in the playoffs. We're going to do it as a group to we're all going to be the base of the third star.
Doc Rivers and Ty Lue are guys that have championships as coaches. The Clippers are fascinating. They put 2 stars into the team, Paul George and Kawhi, had never played together. and Paul had an injury and Kawhi takes some time off. So the team hasn't played a lot together, Tristan. Is that concern you that there isn't really great chemistry yet? Can they flip the switch, in your opinion?
I think they can flip the switch. You know, I played for T. Lou, and T. Lou is definitely a disciple of Doc Rivers and comes from that regime and that umbrella where, you know, Doc's whole thing, similar to T. Lou, is let's just make sure everyone's healthy going to the playoffs, whether they're the 2 seed, the 3 seed, the 4 seed. T. Lou would tell us, I don't care what seed we're in, because when we get to the playoffs, nobody wants to see us and our dogs won't be ready to go. So I think Doc has a mentality where he's got pit bulls on his team. He's got, you know, we know they got the Kawhi and PG, but he's got pit bulls. He's got Pat Bev. He's got Lou Williams. You know, Montrez is playing with a lot of motivation and hungry. So I think with their team is just get healthy and get to the playoffs. And I think they'll figure it out. Their coaching staff and the players that they got, they're all going to rally together and be able to flip that switch.
Zion's an amazing player, but he's been on minute limits. He's been hurt several times. And Tristan, you've been in this league long enough to know some dudes just get hurt a lot. That's just the way their body is genetically. Some guys don't. Some guys can just, they just ball and they don't get hurt. The guy running the Pelicans, you know David Griffin, their GM. You know him well. I've always liked him. Do you think they're handling Zion the right way?
Oh, yeah. Well, Griff knows basketball to a T. You know, he's worked under Colangelo in Phoenix, and I've known Griff since Adidas Nations in high school, him coming to watch me play as a scout for Phoenix. So he knows his basketball, and at the end of the day, I think what they're doing is the right thing. At the end of the day, Zion is their franchise player, and you want to do what's best to get the most out of the kid long term. You know, if they try to run to the ground right now, it's unfair to the kid, and it's unfair to their franchise, and it's unfair to their fans because, listen, of course, do they want to win a championship this year? Would they love to? Of course. But are they built to win a championship this year? If they fall short and they make the playoffs to lose first round, I don't think Griff will be upset. I think for him, he's looking at, where is this team going to be 3 years from now, 2 years from now? And I think that's how their approach is with Zion.
So Philadelphia is a team with a ton of talent, but I just don't think Simmons and Embiid work together. That doesn't mean they're not both great. But there are times in the NBA where dudes don't play together well. They don't work. I think Simmons is not a shooter, so he needs an open lane. But I want Embiid in the lane because that's where he's dominant. Is it when you play the Sixers, I mean, they've moved a lot of parts, Tristan. Do you kind of feel when you play them, super talented, but it just doesn't fit always that well together?
Well, obviously, with Ben now out, who knows how long he's going to be out for with his knee injury. That obviously changes their whole team dynamic. When we play Philly, they really want to get the big fella going and get Joel going to cause, you know, mismatch problems and command a double team. But I know a lot of people wonder, can Ben and Joel play together? I think they can. I think you have to – we know these two guys are the franchise pieces. They're the cornerstone, right? So as Brett Brown, you just got to figure out which pieces can we align them with to bring the best out of them. So, yes, you know, Ben Simmons is not a three-point shooter right now in his career. And we know Joel wants to, you know – handle everything in the paint. So we just got to find guys that can make shots. That's why they brought Tobias to be able to make shots. Josh Richardson, he's another guy that can make shots. That's what they have to figure out. I think what they're doing, putting Ben at the four, is getting him on a second side action, which can cause mismatches. You know, they run the play A to B where they have the handoff with the point guard to kick it back to Ben on the opposite elbow where he goes to the dribble handoff with either Josh or Tobias. And I think getting Ben in those actions on the second side is where, with him not being a three-point threat as of right now, it can still work in their offense. So I think what Brett Brown's doing, trying him at the four, could cause mismatch problems to get him on the second side to be a primary ball handler to force the mismatches, especially with the shot clock winding down to, you know, down to 10 and below.
You know, it's funny. When you're with LeBron for all those years, I get to see game LeBron. You got to see hang out on the road and practice LeBron. Take our audience, Tristan. Was he an intense practice player? What do you miss about LeBron the dude? Just being it, that you guys were rock stars in America. You're the traveling band in America. Beyond, you know, playing in finals, what do you miss about that experience?
I just miss just having in my eyes, one of the greatest players of all time to be able to, actually a great story is when LeBron first came back and, you know, it's me, Kyrie, and Dion, training camp doesn't start till end of September. So he texts us in a group chat like, hey, after Labor Day, let's get back to work. So I think it's like September 6th. So me and Kyrie, we come in there, Dion, we get in there. I think workouts start at 11. We're in there around 10:30, and LeBron's in a full drenched sweat. And for us as 21-year-olds, 20-year-olds, we're like, man, like the best player in our game, he's in a full drenched sweat from just lifting, and he's there before all of us. And just seeing that as a young player, that's greatness right now. That's a guy that understands what it takes to be great and what builds a real culture in a franchise. And seeing that there, you know, you miss that. So for myself and guys that have played with him, I think we just try to be a sponge and try to show that to the younger guys falling behind us. Because at the end of the day, LeBron, he's great and he wants to pay it forward. He wants to pay his knowledge forward so that the younger generations can understand how to treat this game, and what you put in is what you get out. So I always miss just having that, you know, one of the great players just in your locker room every day just to pick his brain. And, you know, obviously great dinners, and, you know, he's know all the good food spots, and he knows his red wine, so I miss those. So now it's on Kev to pick the wine.
Hey, it's great seeing you. Congrats. We love having you on the Fox team. Tristan Thompson, thanks, my man.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.